you as well as from John, because I want you to see that the two stories are pretty much the same ones. The first one is significant because it was Jesus who told them to go on ahead. You don't have to guess why did they go alone. We saw in John's gospel, of course, that Jesus went into the mountains. He didn't want anybody taking hold of him by force to make him king. But that explains the relationship between the two passages. I lived in New York for 26 years. But my father only took me, even though he grew up in Brooklyn, he only took me to Coney Island once. I don't know why he didn't do it, but when he finally got us there, I was about 12 years old. And I wanted to go on the Ferris wheel. My brother and I wanted to go on the Ferris wheel. It looked pretty cool. And we sat in the cages. That was because they didn't want you to fall out. And then I noticed as we were going around, suddenly we were going backwards and forwards, and I was terrified. I was terrified. So was my brother. What I failed to notice at the time, it was my father was having the time of his life, probably recalling his childhood. He didn't realize we were terrified. And I didn't realize that if my father wasn't scared, I didn't have to be scared either, because he was there. He would protect me. He wouldn't put me into a situation where I'd be hurt. That's the way it was. My father was not scared. I didn't realize it did me no good. Fast forward around 25 years later, winter, South Dakota. My son John had a defective vision. He didn't have depth perception. He had a cataract that was removed. They kept the lens out. They didn't replace lenses in those days. And so he had no depth perception. We're out on the street, and the curb, well, the curbs in South Dakota might be more bumps in the road. They maybe were 1 or 2 inches high at most. Well, there's my son, John. He's standing on the edge of the curb. He's looking at me with a beautiful smile on his face and looking down and saying, "Should I jump? Should I jump?" Now, that sounds silly. But when you have no depth perception to a 2-year-old boy, that's like standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon. And it took a great deal of trust for him to go ahead and jump. And I said, "Sure, jump." And it was for him, it was a big accomplishment. It was a brave thing to do. But he trusted his father would not direct him to do something where he would be in a situation where he could not be hurt. You'll see the importance of that in just a bit. You have 12 disciples. Some of them, most of them, are experienced fishermen. They know the Sea of Galilee. They know about strong windstorms. They know about waves. They know about rough seas. They're experienced fishermen, but this was a scary journey. Jesus had them go on their own, and now they're 3 or 4 miles from land, and they're facing a dangerous windstorm. The waves are slopping into the boat. They're afraid it's going to sink. And what's the worst thing that could happen at that point? Suddenly, on the surface of the water, there's some figure coming toward them, and they don't know who it is, and their first thought was what maybe you might have thought of. It's a ghost. Can it get any worse than this? And Jesus says, "It's me. Don't worry, it's me." He gets into the boat, and they let him come in. And then he performs another miracle. We'll get to that also in a moment. What was the point? What was the point that Jesus was making to his disciples? Was it to not care about danger and terror they faced, that they were supposed to be reckless? No. I want you to watch with me what happens in this narrative, this history, because this is the real thing. This actually happened. Jesus really did walk on the waves. Jesus sent his disciples into the danger of the storm, and I put it to you, brothers and sisters, he did so with careful thought beforehand. He knew what he was doing. He knew what they would be facing. Notice the action with me. Jesus well knew what he was doing, because we know in chapter 5 and verse 19, Truly, truly, I say to you, he said, the Son can do nothing of himself unless it is something he sees the Father doing. And I put it to you, Jesus saw the Father letting them go in the boat alone. And he followed, as he always did, the Father's lead. This was what he was supposed to do. Remember, he's a man reliant on the Father to guide him. The Creator of the wind and the waves knew they would be afraid. They knew they lived in a fallen world where they would feel unsafe when the creation seemed to be rallying against them. He knew also because he had been with Israel in the Red Sea. Remember we said last time there are hints that this is a parallel in some ways to the Exodus. Now the Israel is in the midst of the waves of the Red Sea, and the reason they feel safe and secure is because the Lord's with them in the cloud, not only protecting them from the Egyptians who are hot on their trail, but also going with them. So they feel safe. Jesus has done this before. He's doing it again now with his disciples. But the disciples were hard put to it. They willingly gave the master the freedom to seclude himself from the crowd. They may have said, should we go bother him? No, he said, go. We'll go by ourselves. We know how to sail a boat after all. And Jesus had told them to do it, so they did. But things got out of control. The wind, the waves, they're scared. And the next thing they know, here comes Jesus walking on the water, headed straight for them. And again, Matthew said they thought he was a ghost, and Jesus is assuring them he's fine. They let him into the boat, and then he performs another miracle. He performs another miracle. No sooner is he in the boat, but then they are immediately at the place they're supposed to be. The commentaries differ on this, but I really prefer the interpretation that says he got in the boat, there they were. Now they know who they're with. They have more evidence that Jesus is the Son of God become man. They know this is someone who can do anything that he chooses to do. But the question is, was it really necessary to frighten them, to deliberately send them into danger alone? But this is Jesus, you see. And he always has a good reason for what he does. It's a good thing for us to keep that in mind. If things go against our wills, if things happen we don't like, we need to remember that Jesus is directing our lives and the events of our lives by his providence, remember the evening sermons, by his providence to do us good and not evil. Jesus was teaching them to trust him. Why was this important? Why the terror? Why put them in this situation? I give you one reason. I want you to look forward with me to the end of these disciples' lives. Peter and Andrew will die by crucifixion. Peter himself earlier would be imprisoned by King Herod. Thomas would be speared to death. John would be exiled to Patmos after they unsuccessfully tried to kill him by boiling him in oil. Philip, all I could find in the records was he died a cruel death, by which I think it probably meant painful, maybe even drawn out. Matthew was also martyred, and so was Simon the Zealot. All of them, except for John, died horrible deaths, because they loved and believed and served Jesus. Now, when they went to their deaths, I put it to you, none of them thought of themselves as alone. Take Peter, imprisoned by Herod. What was going through his mind? We're not told. But do you think he forgot that Jesus came to him in the most impossible place on the sea in the midst of the storm, walking on the water? And I put it to you, Peter expected to see Jesus at any moment. Either Jesus would unlock the door and take him out, or Jesus would welcome him into his arms and take him to heaven. Now, I'm doing a lot of supposing here, But with this lesson firmly in mind, certainly it's reasonable to expect that they would trust Jesus, would never leave them alone in a scary situation, A, without good reason, and B, without being with them all the way. He was teaching them to trust them because he knew worse than wind and waves was coming in their lives in just a few years, relatively speaking. And Jesus did warn them of what they faced. In John chapter 16, verses 1 through 4, he said later, "These things I have spoken to you, that you may be kept from stumbling. They'll make you outcasts from the synagogue, but an hour is coming for everyone who kills you to think that he is offering service to God. And these things they will do because they have not known the Father or me. But these things I've spoken to you, that when the hour comes, you may remember that I told you of them. And these things I did not say to you at the beginning because I was with you." But then, remember how he closes his earthly ministry with them at the end of Matthew. "I am with you always, even unto the end of the age." So they will have fixed in their memory, burnt into their memory, Jesus walking on the waves, and burnt into their memory those words, "I am with you always." None of them would die alone. But they had to learn he would be there for them. He could have promised and did before he ascended that he'd be with them, but a picture is worth a thousand words. And so, verse 19, when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they beheld Jesus walking on the sea and drawing near to the boat. That's a picture you're not going to forget. They certainly did not. And so when the time to die came for him came, they expected him to be there either to rescue him, as I said, or to welcome them into his arms. And the lesson for you and for me is this: Jesus never abandons his disciples of times of danger or sorrow or stress. Never. Do you remember the story of Lazarus dying? And Jesus tries to get there in time, but deliberately his timing was after Lazarus died. And Martha and Mary both asked the same question: "Why weren't you here? If you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died." And Martha said, "Do you believe?" Jesus said to Martha, "Do you believe? I know my brother will rise on the last day." Sure, she believed. So did Mary. But they had to ask the question: "Why did you do this to us, Lord?" Well, the reason was simple. "Because you have to see me raise him from the dead, so you really will remember that I'm never leaving you alone, ever, to face the worst." Jesus never abandons his disciples in times of danger or sorrow or stress. Never. And beloved, Jesus wants you to learn that same lesson this morning. Some of you have rough lives. For some of you, it's a moving experience. For some of you, it's been tough times in marriage. For some of you, tough times in business. Some of you are in physical pain. Some of you have loved ones who have been sick and dying. Some of you have wondered if you'd ever get another job. Some of you have suffered unexplainable illnesses. Some of you have been almost crippled. And we all have to learn the same lesson, don't we? Jesus never abandons us. Jesus, your Lord and Master and King and Teacher, knows what he's sending you into. He knows the scary, sad, uncomfortable, even dangerous things he'll send you and that he sent you into so that you'd have to face them face on, full on. He knows your weakness. He knows your fears and your needs. He knows your secret unbelief, your usual sins, and your usual sinful responses. He knows everything about you. But he also knows, because he's God and the most perfect teacher that ever existed, he also knows how to teach you to live, and so sends you into situations where you'll be weak and fearful in order to educate you as to who he is and how he keeps his promises and how his arms are there to keep hold you up in the worst of times. What Jesus wants you to know based on this passage is the same thing he wanted his 12 to know. Sadly, one of them forgot that and tried to get him killed and succeeded. He's telling you and teaching you to believe it. I will be with you in times of danger and stress, and I will never, ever leave you alone. When you face the worst of your fears, Scripture is full of promises from God that he'll be with you. I want you to listen to these rather than look them up. Psalm 139, verse 7, where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? Well, the implied answer is nowhere. Isaiah 57, 15, for thus says the high and exalted one who lives forever, whose name is holy, I dwell in a high and holy place. And also with the contrite of and lowly of spirit, in order to revive the spirit of the lowly and to revive the heart of the contrite. John 14, 16, I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper, that he may be with you forever. Matthew 28, 20, I've quoted it before, lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. And Psalm 23, 4, I'll bet you have it memorized. I'll bet you have it memorized, Psalm 23, 4. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Because you are with me. You see? Jesus, the same yesterday, Old Testament, today, New Testament, and our day, and forever. He doesn't change. He doesn't change his commitments. He never does, never will. When you face the worst of your fears, the worst that life can throw at you, those promises and others like them are Christ's word and his bond. You can depend on them in any circumstance. Do you know the story of the hymn, It Is Well With My Soul? I'm wondering, some of you may well know the story behind that. It was written by a man named Horace Spofford. In 1873, 2 years after the scarlet fever killed his 4-year-old son, writer Horace Spofford decided his family should take a holiday somewhere in Europe. And he chose England, knowing his good friend Dwight Moody would be there. How would you like to have a good friend named Dwight Moody? And they'd be preaching there in the fall. He was delayed because of business, so he sent his family ahead. His wife and their 4 children, daughters, 11-year-old Annie, 9-year-old Margaret Lee, Maggie, 5-year-old Elizabeth Bessie, and 2-year-old Tanetta. On November 22nd, 1873, while crossing the Atlantic on a steamship, their ship was struck by an iron sailing vessel, and 226 people lost their lives, including all 4 of Spofford's daughters. Only his wife, Anna Spofford, survived the tragedy. Upon arriving in England, she sent a telegram to Spofford beginning, saved alone. Spofford then sailed to England, going over the location of his daughter's deaths. And according to Bertha Spofford Vester, a daughter born after the tragedy, Spofford wrote, "It is well with my soul," after passing through that location. It is well with my soul. A huge part of facing danger and sorrow and stress and frustration well is knowing who is with you and that that person will not leave you and will not fail you. Corrie ten Boom lived in part in dependence on her sister being with her in the Ravensbrück concentration camp where she and other Jews were kept. When her sister died, shortly thereafter, Corrie ten Boom, through an error in the paperwork, was freed. But she knew she wasn't alone. She said, there's no trial so deep, but God's love is deeper still. You may be brave. You may be iron-willed. You may be battle-tested, battle-hardened, even experienced in all kinds of pain and terror and horror. But none of that is any good unless you're able by faith to see Jesus walking on the sea and drawing near you in your waterlogged and sinking boat. Troubles almost whelm the soul. Griefs like billows o'er me roll. Tempters seek to lure astray. Storms obscure the light of day. But in Christ, I can be bold. I've an anchor that shall hold. What about you? What about you? Do you have an anchor for your soul? And how's it holding? There is only one anchor that can be trusted, and that's Jesus himself. If you are his, he will never leave you nor forsake you. He will keep you safe. So I ask you, are you his? If so, you're safe and always will be. That doesn't mean you'll never be scared. Of course you'll be scared sometimes. That's not a sin. So long as you remember Jesus is with you. Because then you have an anchor to hold on to, someone to talk to, someone to pray to. But if he's not yours, why not give yourself to him right now? He is the friend who sticks closer than a brother, and in his arms, there's not a storm, not one storm that can tear you out of those arms. This morning, turn to Jesus now and trust him. Let us pray. Our gracious Lord,